land of ours is under attack. Time has come, we're gonna take it back. Just gonna wait and see. Don't tread on me. I won't sit back, stand idly by. Watch the heart of my nation die. Oh, not me. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible. Don't tread on my guts. Don't you tread on my faith in God's only son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free. And I damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Time has come, gonna take a stand. Spread these words all across the land. From sea to sea, don't tread on me. So tell your neighbors, tell all your friends. Gonna see that eagle flying high again. You better believe, don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible, don't tread on my guns. Don't you tread on my freedom, God's only son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free. And I'll damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Yeah, I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me.
Hey, everybody, welcome into Friday, October 31st, 2025 edition. Your Defending Fathers, Trucker Randy Bishop, Patriot Voice Radio Network. Greatly appreciate you guys being part of the show today. Text line is open, 231-360-5140. Please be relevant on topic to the conversation. Greatly appreciate that. Also, we got a great show lined up for you today. In our third hour, we're going to have a special guest, Anthony Ferlini. He is the Macomb County Clerk, Register of Deeds, running for Secretary of State. He will be up at the state convention March 28th, looking for the precinct delegates to vote for him to be the nominee for the Republican Party for Secretary of State. He'll be joining us at 11:30. Looking forward to having him on the show. We got a history lesson in the second hour. Justin Michael, who's running for Congress, primary election next August for the 1st Congressional District. He's coming on next in the next segment. Lots of information. Overnight, all the news sources verified that Lansing, working together bipartisan fashion, working with the governor, have put together enough money to fund SNAP programs here in Michigan. This is in the process of going through the budget process of how they're going to shift the funds around, but it appears that they are going to be able to come up with some money to keep the food stamps, the SNAP program, funded at least for the month of November. So we're going to talk about that with Justin Michael and other things. But the bottom line, United Auto Workers Local 5960 President Gerald Lang on supporting lawmakers for their support in using the state's rainy day fund money to give hundreds of displaced employees who don't have a job because of the government shutdown. I've got members who can't remember what they ate for lunch yesterday, and yet they're expected to remember what happened in 2020. So that was quote of the day. We're going to get into that story. The bottom line, food banks are getting $4.5 million and $71 million total for temporary food assistance to fund the SNAP program. So we're very much going to be talking about this in the next segment with Justin Michael. Because one of the things I think we have to look at is what happens if, and I'm just saying if, Washington doesn't open back up going into the end of November, when the real budget deadline kicks in? Well, going to be an interesting conversation. State Department of Health and Human Services Director Elizabeth Hertel has been directed by the Budget Director Jen Flund to steer $4.5 million to the Food Bank Council of Michigan. This is going to be a temporary response since the temporary hold on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program funding on November 1st, tomorrow. So we're going to get into this story. We're going to get into all of it. But basically, this is something that needs to be figured out, evidently, by the politicians in Lansing. So we'll get a federal perspective on it. Congressman primary candidate Justin Michael in the next segment. Short break. We'll be right back.
This is Justin Michael. I grew up in Grayling, Michigan, where small-town values and hard work shaped who I am. I proudly served in the U.S. Army in combat, and today I continue serving as a conflict resolution specialist and an advocate for veterans, families, and working people across northern Michigan and in the Upper Peninsula. I know the struggles our communities face because I live them. I'm Justin Michael. Let's start bridging the divides in our district together. Paid for by Justin Michael for Congress.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. I support this show, and I would like to offer you our biggest discounts for listening. So please go to our website, MyPillow.com, and put in the promo code at the end of this message to get the biggest discounts. Again, thanks for listening, and God bless.
Thanks, Mike. Folks, go to MyPillow.com and enter the promo code TRUCKERRANDY, or call 800-654-9659.
Hey everybody, it's Trucker Randy, the Yo-Yo Diet King. I have literally lost hundreds of pounds in my life. Slim Fast in the 90s, Nutrisystem in 2000, South Beach, Superfoods, they all worked in the short term, only to gain it all back, plus some. Now that I'm 65, I really wanted to find a program that would increase my metabolism to burn my belly fat, bring my hormones back to my younger days without any exercising. Then I met Missy of MyPure Health Solutions. She explained how her program does exactly what I was looking for. Go to TruckerRandyHealth.com. Follow my journey with Missy and see that I dropped 22 pounds of body fat in the first 14 days without exercising and eating real foods. Again, go to TruckerRandyHealth.com and schedule a free consultation or call Missy at 269-964-4044. Let Missy change your metabolism just like she's changed mine. Do it today. The Sioux Animal Hospital in Sault Ste. Marie has been in the same location for 35 years. The owner, Dr. Jeff, specializes in providing all aspects of care for your animals. From annual shots to complicated bone and soft tissue surgeries, Dr. Jeff can take care of any animal. So call him today at 906-635-5910. From dogs and cats to cows and horses, Dr. Jeff loves them all. So give him a call at 906-635-5910.
Y'all up here in northern Michigan have heard of Curtis Gunsmithing, the little gun shop over here off Picker Lake Road in Petoskey. Mr. Tom Curtis can fix any gun you put in front of him. The Gun Doctor is a certified gunsmith. You won't find one better in the north. And you sure as heck don't have to travel out of town to go see one. Get your quality gun work done right here in your town. Curtis Gunsmithing of Petoskey. Give Tom a call today at 231-838-5571. Come see the Gun Doctor.
Hey, everybody, welcome back into the show. This is the second segment here on this Friday. Joining us on the line right now is Justin Michael. He is a candidate for the Republican nomination to be your next congressman in Washington, D.C. Good morning, Justin.
Hey, good morning, Randy. How are you doing?
We're doing good. I just read the temporary little Band-Aid that the House down in Lansing passed yesterday afternoon, $4.5 million to go to local food banks. This isn't for the SNAP program. That's being paused as of tomorrow morning, November 1st. But $4.5 million going to food banks. This is where locals can go to get food. All 83 counties, according to the governor, are going to get food and even have delivery services if folks can't drive to the food bank. The Senate, Democrat-controlled Senate, wants $71 million this week. But John Roth, our state representative in my district, 104th, says SNAP costs $300 million a month to fund here in the state of Michigan. So $4.5 million drop in the bucket and is basically only going to give them enough food to last about 2 weeks. My question to you, running for Congress, why can't Washington at least pass something to get our police, our military, and these food situations funded while they argue over Obamacare and all the other things that the Democrats are objecting to? Why can't this get done, in your opinion?
Well, constitutionally, Congress would have to come back into session and vote for those bills, temporary relief bills, to be passed before they could be voted on. And that's a concern because Congress has been basically on vacation for the last 6 weeks while the Senate's been arguing through the shutdown. So we would have to get our lawmakers back to Washington, D.C. to vote on these temporary resolutions in order to get some funding passed in order to be voted on in the Senate.
Right.
Now, I know that there are both Republicans and Democrats in the Senate who are trying to work to get Congress back to vote on those because they understand the importance of making sure that Americans don't go hungry.
Right. Well, one of the things that I found to be pretty interesting in looking at the SNAP budget, $300 million per month to fund it through the Department of Health and Human Services. And come to find out, we have 1.4 million people here in the state of Michigan with a population less than 10 million. We've got about 15-16% of our population on the SNAP program, and that stops. The cards will not get refilled tomorrow morning. So basically, like you say, what can we do at this point?
Right, and obviously the amount of money that Gretchen Whitmer is talking about giving to people in Michigan, it's just not going to make much of a dent or impact. I mean, you look at from a federal standpoint, right? You're looking at roughly $8.3 billion a month it costs the federal government to run the SNAP programs, roughly $100 billion a year. In our district alone, we have about 65,000 people that are going to be affected by this. And interesting enough, the top five hardest hit counties in our district are in the UP, Varga, Gogebic, Ontonagon, Iron, and Luce, where their percentages are above that 15% threshold, Varga being the worst at roughly 18% of their population is on SNAP programs or participate in SNAP. So you're looking at our district. A lot of individuals rely on those benefits, you know, which is a concern also. We have to ask ourselves the question, why is such a higher percentage in certain areas in our district being affected so much, or why are they taking these benefits in the first place? You know, and you can look at some of that being poverty related, unemployment related, rural isolationism, you know, and then also elderly and disabled individuals that live up there. So, you know, it's a significant concern in our district, especially where we are, you know, we have pockets of affluency, but most of the people are on that line and need some of these benefits to survive.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that you mentioned, being isolated in the way these rural areas are, I mean, geographically, we can't do anything about it. And then at the other hand, you don't have necessarily enough population to sustain a factory or a big, large corporation coming in there, setting up shop, providing jobs for people. Because once you get a job, basically you know, you won't qualify. Now they're monitoring the SNAP program every 6 months as opposed to annually. And a lot of people are being taken off of the program because, you know, they don't qualify because they make too much or whatever. But what do you do? I mean, this is, as far as I know, this has been an ongoing problem forever because you just don't have the commerce. You just don't have the industry. You just don't have the people to necessarily sustain those outlying counties. So I don't know how else we can address it. What's your thoughts of how maybe we could help those people and perhaps grow them out of this type of, absolutely dependency is what it's boiling down to. They're dependent on these programs.
Yeah, and that's always been the challenge, right? How do we turn, you know, this idea that people have that people just get on these programs and just want to stay there? How do we get those individuals into the mindset that, you know, this isn't welfare, this is an opportunity for you to get back on your feet, show some compassion, which means helping people escape from poverty, not manage poverty. And that's right. always been the concern. So we need to focus on programs that help lift people up and don't penalize them for getting back into the workforce. You know, give them a nice bridge to find opportunities to be more productive and prosperous in society. And I think when you talk about job growth and creation, that's one thing that we really need to focus on. Some of that's regulatory and needs to be changed at the congressional level. And other things we can do are tax breaks and benefits to businesses that want to go into rural areas. But there's a lot of things that need to happen in order to improve that. And rural broadband is a great example of that.
Yeah.
Getting people the training and education that they need. And when you're in an interesting situation right now with the economy too, where people are laying off individuals. So more people look like they may be reliant on some of these programs, and there aren't those programs now available because of the shutdown. So you're kind of at a double-edged sword. And we need leadership to step up, especially in Washington, D.C., and say, hey, this is our plan, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to improve the lives of people in rural communities who are affected by programs like SNAP or who are affected by industries either not being present in those areas or those industries shutting down or laying individuals off because they're transitioning into more AI or technologically based programs.
Right. Well, one of the things I've been pushing is the tunnel so that we could get additional electricity cables up into the UP to lower the cost of electricity, but also high-speed fiber optic internet, because I think a lot of these rural areas, some of these folks, now it's a requirement to stay on SNAP that you have to try to find work at least 80 hours a month, basically 20 hours a week. And I'm saying, wait a minute, if they're trained, if we can get them a certificate or a community college degree, where at least they have a two-year degree in computers or code or AI or whatever technology, if you give them the internet and you give them cheaper electricity and a laptop, a lot of these people could start making money, you know, working for a company remotely. Heck, half of our government in Lansing doesn't even go into the office anymore. So why couldn't those folks in the rural areas of northern Michigan do it as well?
Well, I also think that you have to look at that from the broad context of just access to job applications, right? There's so many softwares that are out there that allow people to be able to search for open jobs. And there are companies that are hiring people, but a lot of times if you don't have access to broadband or you don't have access to technology or even understand how to utilize technology, which right. There are a lot of people in our district that don't know how to effectively utilize technology to help them in the job search, it limits their ability to even find or locate employment because they're so geographically strained that they may not know that there's a job available that fits their needs or their qualifications 20 or 30 miles away from them.
Sure.
Or they just don't have access to the information or don't know how to use the technology or haven't been taught how to use the technology to find those jobs that could be out there and could give them the benefits that they need. So I think that there's, like I said before, there's a lot of issues that we need to look at. but they're not things that are unsolvable. We just got to get people in leadership positions that understand the importance and also understand the wherewithal and how to get people connected, get the resources necessary to connect them, and then guide them through the process. It's one thing to just hook your house up to the internet. It's another thing to know how to use the internet as an effective tool for you and your family to be successful.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. They could be trained. Community colleges, even high schools are offering adult education programs, classes that they could go and specifically, like you say, learn how to turn a computer on, understand, you know, how it's connected to the internet, and show them how to open up a browser and how to do a search. I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot of effort to sit down with somebody and walk them through it. So
yeah, definitely. And I think in our district, we have a unique district, right? We're kind of the last frontier in the digital transition. And I think that you have a lot of the aging population who's kind of anti-technology. You know, they don't want the cell phones and they don't want the access. They don't want the internet. I meet a lot of people, you know, that are just happy being simple and less technology right. in their life, the better. So there is a little bit of pushback on that. But in order for us to maintain a threshold in the next 25 years of development, we need to invest heavily in broadband access. And the tunnel, I think, you know, you're onto something. I think not only is it a great opportunity to lower energy prices in the UP, give access to digital technology, but it also gives another option of transportation into the UP, which takes a lot of strain off the Mackinac Bridge and gives us, you know, options. Obviously, we know in the wintertime, the stressors of crossing the Mackinac Bridge can be pretty heightened just due to inclement weather. So there's just a lot of opportunities that we have. Obviously, that's an expensive project, and they need to make sure that gets taken care of. But that brings up other funding issues, too. I mean, we've been working on the Sioux Locks funding for, you know, the last decade pretty hard. We've gotten portions of it, but again, you know, it's not complete, and you're asking yourself, why can't you just allocate the money that's necessary in order to get that done? You know, but they've been talking about it since the 80s. So, you know, you're looking at the first congressional district as a place where a lot of talk has been done, but not a lot of action. And there seems to be infrastructure issues that are collapsing, even with the mail, for example. There's a lot of things that other districts don't have any issues with, but the first congressional district seems to be forgotten in Washington, D.C., and that's a problem.
Yeah, Toe, I know. I had a lady said that she mailed a check to us almost 2 weeks ago, and we still haven't received it. She was up in the western part of the UP. Have no idea where it's at, even if it's coming, because it's, like you said, it's so many issues.
Yeah, it's crazy to me to think that's, you know, a factor. A lot of our local press and businesses that rely on subscription-based payments.
Sure.
The people sent, or even people getting, for example, like their newspaper.
Yeah.
When it gets, you know, it's coming 3, 4, 5 weeks later, and you're thinking, we're living the 21st century and we haven't figured out the mail in our district. I mean,
exactly.
It's, you laugh, but it's sad, right?
I mean,
this is, the Postal Service has been around for a long time, and we can't deliver mail to people on time. And some of these people need that stuff, like especially in the press industry, people need their paper when you're paying for a subscription. And if you don't get it, you're like, I'm just done. So, Randy, it's been great. Thank you so much. Justin Michael for Congress.com. I appreciate you guys. Appreciate you, Randy. You have a wonderful day. And thank you so much for having me on your show.
Yeah. You as well, sir. Have a good weekend.
Yep. Take care.